This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
This episode of Nine Lives with Dr. Cat is brought to you by Meow Greens. Get a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to meowgreens.com and use promo code 9Lives.
Hey there, cat lovers. Welcome to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat. I'm your host, Dr. Catherine Prim, and I'm a small animal veterinarian and crazy cat lover. So today I have with me Dr. Joe Barchas. He's been with us here before. He is a veterinary nutritionist, and so we want to make sure that everybody understands how to feed their cats in the best way possible. So we'll be right back with Dr. Barchas. Hey there, cat lovers. It's Dr. Catherine Prim from Nine Lives with Dr. Cat. We all want our cats to be happy and healthy. Well, Meow Greens is a product that you can add to your cat's food. It improves joint health, may even reduce cancer risk. It has enzymes and probiotics and vitamins specially formulated for cats. So, they have a 90-day challenge. At 30 days, you're going to see more energy and a shiny coat. By day 60, your cat's going to have a stronger immune system and improved joint health. And at day 90, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even reduce their cancer risk. Plus, you can get a free Jumpstart trial bag for your cat today. Go to roughgreens.com and use the promo code 9Lives. That's ruffgreens.com with the promo code 9Lives. You don't have to change your cat's food to improve your cat's health. Just add a scoop of Meow Greens.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Nine Lives with Dr. Cat on Pet Life Radio. And I am here with Dr. Joe Barchas. And as you heard, he is a nutritionist. He's also an internal medicine specialist and a veterinarian, of course. So, hey, Dr. Barchas.
Good morning, afternoon, wherever you are, Dr. Prim and everyone else.
So I think that it is really, really important. And I think that it is really sort of a headline about nutrition. I wonder if that frustrates you at all, that nutrition hits the headlines in the ways that it does. What do you think?
Well, I think it's like anything. There's a mix of good information and oftentimes not so good or not so correct or sort of correct, but not totally. So I think it is more dependent upon the source. Because information's good, it's just bad information makes things worse.
So I skipped over this part, but for my listeners that haven't heard you as a guest on the show, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you got there?
Make sure you're sitting. So my name is Joe Barchas. I am currently, and have been for the last 8 or 9 years, a professor of internal medicine, interventional radiology, and nutrition. I am board certified in the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine in the specialties of small animal internal medicine and in the specialty of nutrition. I'm also a founding member of the newly recognized specialty college called the American College of Veterinary Nephrology and Urology. And I am from West Virginia originally, West by God, stand up and shout it when you say it, Virginia originally, born, bred, and raised. I'm a graduate of Marshall University in 1983. I graduated from the University of Georgia in 1987. I did my internship and residencies in medicine, nutrition, and a PhD and a postdoc at the University of Minnesota. And then in 94, I came to the University of Georgia. I was here for about 3 years, went to the University of Tennessee, was there for a while, 16, 17 years, something like that. And then went to the Cornell University Veterinary Specialist, which is a referral practice owned by Cornell University in Connecticut. I was there for a few years and then came back to the University of Georgia in 2016.
So basically, I just found somebody off the street to talk to today.
Pretty much. Well, it's because I just keep moving. So the answer to that is yes. I'm obviously running from something.
Well, okay. So I think that you're qualified to answer my questions. So I guess I want to kind of start with the basics. And I think in my mind, one of the basics about cat nutrition is that they are obligate carnivores. So can you speak on that?
Yeah, in a brief, in a sort of a quick overview, cats are considered obligate carnivores. Dogs are considered omnivorous carnivores because they can do okay with vegetarian, vegan foods, maybe not as good, but they evolve from carnivores. Cats, on the other hand, are considered truly carnivores because of their metabolism. They have some things different from dogs and humans and very similar to other carnivores like, you know, ferrets and things like that, that require that they eat more protein as part of their diet than other species. They cannot downregulate some of their metabolic pathways. So like if we don't eat protein, some of our liver pathways go downregulate, but cats, they can't do that. They require certain vitamins and minerals and things like that that are really, for the most part, only found naturally in animal-based tissues. Certain types of fatty acids, like arachidonic acid, for example, is found in mainly animal fat. And that just, they do better when they eat more protein because it's, you know, in their nature, as it were. And that creates a little bit of a problem because a lot of the foods that have developed for cats have evolved into less expensive, more carbohydrate-based foods. And so we kind of force them to eat, if you feed commercially available dry and canned foods in particular, we sort of force them to eat more carbohydrates than they normally would if they were out hunting prey. And actually in the wild, they eat very little carbohydrates. If you look at the composition of birds and rodents and things like that, you know, it's like single-digit percent of their diet is carbohydrate, whereas commercial, sort of conventional, traditional, which are terrible terms, but only ones available, are in the 40-plus percent carbohydrate. So we really, even the low-carbohydrate commercial pet foods are not as low as what's found in prey, which, again, we are getting closer, but not quite there.
So do you think that this increased carbohydrates above what is naturally a cat's diet leads to things like obesity or maybe some of the diseases that we see in cats?
I think the answer to that is it a direct cause? There are a few studies that have tried to look at that. They haven't really found like increased carbohydrates cause diabetes mellitus, which is something that everybody is often said and quoted. And actually the studies don't quite show that. And I'm going to go back to what the studies mean and don't mean here in 2 seconds. Obesity, actually, in some studies, is linked more to the fat that they content that they eat than the carbohydrate. But having said that, there are a couple of things that I think need to be kept in mind. One is most of these studies are very small. We're talking a few dozen, maybe 100. I mean, it's not like a human study where there's 40,000 people that they've followed for 50 years. You know, it's like a 3-month study that have looked at something and a relatively small number of animals compared to the number of cats owned in the United States, let alone the world. I think the second is when you focus on one thing, like is it protein, is it carbohydrate, we fail to take into account that they don't exist in a vacuum. That is, if you eat more carbohydrate, you have to eat less of something else. If you eat less of something, you have to eat more of something else. So if you eat more carbohydrate, then you either need to eat less protein or less fat or, you know, the macronutrients that you get your energy from, or else it does lead to obesity. And I think the other that we fail to take into account, although there's a little bit starting to be done and we're involved with research in this area, is the processing. There is certainly a difference between eating an ear of corn that you take right off the stalk and then eating corn chips that have been made from corn ground into flour that's been baked and mixed with other things. And there are just differences. So it's hard to say for sure how definitive those statements are, but certainly processing of food, and that's what we do with pet foods for the most part, becomes a potential confounding factor and maybe a big player in it. That wasn't quite the good answer that I was striving for, because the answer to your question is, we don't really know. although a lot of things are blamed on carbohydrates. Personally, and with cats of our own, we don't feed them a lot of carbohydrates. They eat very minimal carbohydrates, and they eat a lot of protein.
Okay. Well, so I warned you that I saw a headline that suggested that vegan cats do better than other cats. And you've already said studies are questionable because of a lot of different factors. But I want to touch on that a little bit because I don't want my listeners to all suddenly go out and try to convert their cats to veganism.
Yeah, and I would advise against that because it takes a lot to balance out a vegan food. Cats are very protein driven and very animal protein driven. And when you, and they like texture. That's why when they eat prey, they start at the head and work to the tail, for example. And so when you start screwing around with that, you've got to really find the cat that will eat it and find the, you know, the type of food that they'll eat. There was a survey that was published 2 years ago, maybe, or a year and a half ago or so, out of, I think it was Europe, Germany, maybe UK and Germany. And if I remember, they surveyed pet owners and there were something like 1,400 cats that they surveyed the owners of. And cat owners are like, when you eat pistachios, you can't have one. So I don't know, like, did one person only have one cat, which I doubt, or did one person have 100 cats, which you see every once in a while. So it's hard to know. They didn't give you that information. And the majority of the cats were eating conventional, again, heat processed, canned, dry foods, meat versus either raw meat diets or vegan diets. And they didn't really give a lot of information as to how the vegan diets were made or where they were from. And what they found is that in this study, that there were fewer diseases found in the cats eating the vegan foods than eating the conventional meat-based diets. And I think there are a couple of things about this that, again, you need to keep in mind, because again, this is like 1,400 cats, so that's not too bad. However, the number of cats eating vegan foods were like 100. And the number of cats eating raw meat diets were under 100. And they lumped the raw meat in with the non-raw meat diets to call them just meat diets. And so there's, again, a lot of confounding issues here, that not counting how long did they eat it, how long did they own the cats, you know, which were homemade, which were not. So it's just, at least from what I remember of the study, it's not well-defined enough to draw great conclusions from it, in my opinion. It also didn't give a lot of information. Are they indoor, outdoor? Do they eat prey outside? Well, what if the vegan cat goes out and catches a mouse or two every day? I mean, it's not really a vegan cat then. So there's too many things to just say this caused that when there's so many interacting factors.
I thought that as well. I had a lot of questions, but I thought I'd bring it up to you.
I will say I also need to go back and reread the study again because I'm pulling this out of off the top of my head.
It was weak. It was weak. But, you know, in today's world, people see a headline and that's all.
Well, that's true. We live in a sensationalist kind of environment these days, especially in the news. And so when somebody sees something and they, you know, it gets published or said, you hear what you want to hear and see what you want to see. And then it just sort of perpetuates into this myth becomes reality kind of deal.
So here we are. I'm trying to myth bust. All right. Well, that kind of leads us into some of the trends, because you've touched on a little bit about raw feeding. And I guess that kind of leads over to sort of some grain-free hot topics and things. Can we talk about those a little bit?
Sure.
So let's start with raw.
Where do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll give you some guidance.
Okay. Yeah, that's a broad topic, and it'll take more than 5 or 10 minutes. And I will preface this, I guess, by saying that a lot of the, again, things that get into press, lay press, or into talks or people's opinions, and are not based on a lot of data. And the issue is pet food is sort of like religion and politics. When you have an opinion, there is very little that you can that somebody can do to shake that opinion. And so it becomes a very visceral kind of response to discussions that don't quite mesh with what your feelings or belief systems are for, say, pet food. And so there are a couple of things. So we want to start with raw food. And I am not opposed to raw food. We feed our cats some raw food. And I think the issue is usually what's said is raw food offers no advantage over not raw food, meaning conventional, traditional, high heat process, dry food, canned food, which is what usually everything is compared to. And certainly a large percentage of cats eat those foods, if not in full, at least in large part of what their diets are. The thing about that is those kind of foods have not been around for more than 100 years. Canned foods came about in the 20s or so, where they started putting, you know, processing meats and putting the cans in. When the war came about, the World Wars came about, dry food came about in the 1950s from actually cereal making. Purina Mills, somebody smart said, we make cereal that uses this process called extrusion, that we can mass produce this. Maybe we can make dog and cat food with it. And lo and behold, they did, because carbohydrates are way cheaper than proteins. And so when you look at that, I mean, we're talking about 50 to 100 years of what we're basing all of this on versus cats and dogs have been in domesticated for, you know, centuries, and we're not fed processed foods. So I think the issue with raw food is, again, and not opposed to it, I think the issue is how you handle it, where you get it from, and what you do with it. Just like anything. And we've had clients that are like, well, I just stopped by this parking lot and there's this guy selling dead calves. And so that's what I feed to my, you know, dogs or cats. It's like, that's probably not good. And up until more recently, there hasn't been good guidelines and there's for raw food versus not raw food. And so a lot of before 2020, 2018, somewhere in there, there were a lot of infectious diseases and things found with dogs and cats eating raw foods, salmonella, for example. In 2020, and something that started in 2013, there is something called the Food Safety Modernization Act, FSMA, F-S-M-A, which requires food that's commercially sold for dog and cat consumption be no salmonella, not just a little, which human food can have, but no, zero whatsoever. And so because of that, the number of dogs and cats developing infectious diseases, at least from salmonella and some of the other bacteria, have gone down dramatically in the last 4 or 5 years. So commercial pet food, raw or not, has to meet all of the same regulations as non-raw food does in terms of complete balanced life stage, all of that stuff. The issue is when you go to the grocery store and you say buy chicken and just feed raw chicken, 30 to 40% of raw chicken you buy at the grocery store can contain salmonella. And it's not illegal. We get around it because we cook it. And so there is this potential risk, depending on where you get your food from, that the bacteria, you could pass on bacteria. And so good hygiene makes a lot of sense. And that doesn't mean that dogs and cats get sick from it. It means that if they have it and it passes through, they're healthy, but they contaminate the environment. And in most situations, no big deal. We get exposed to infectious diseases all the time. Most of us never get sick. In fact, we probably mount some immune response. But if you have patient people in the house, young children, elderly, chemotherapy, and a lot of diseases that affect your immune system, then it can be a problem. So keeping things clean, keeping them separate from the food that you eat, washing hands, cleaning things well, not mixing utensils together, all of those make total sense. If you really want to sort of feed raw, but really want to try and minimize the risk of bacteria, if you just take the protein and sear it, you so that the, and I personally like my steaks, like when I say rare, I mean like blue. And so most bacteria live on the surface of the meats. And so if you sear it real quick, then the inside's still very rare, but the outside, you've killed most of the bacteria. That's a way around it. It doesn't work as well with ground meats because they all those bacteria get mixed in as you ground up the hamburger or the sausage or whatever. The other thing now that's kind of become a hot topic with raw food is avian influenza virus and the cats in particular, which, you know, there's so little known, I think, about this. It's hard to make a great recommendation on this because the recommendations are don't feed raw. Raw is bad. Raw kills. Raw, you know, everything. When you look, there's one cat in Oregon that they found virus in the cat, died, and virus in the raw food. And they were identical. They were the same virus, at least genetically. Now, there are, and then more recently, there's some cats in California that they were not eating raw pet food. They were drinking raw milk, which can contain the virus as well. When you look back, the avian influenza virus in cats have been around since like 2006 or so when I went back and started looking through all of this. And there have been some sporadic cases and a little small outbreaks. Some were in cats that were in feral cats that were probably eating wild birds. In fact, a long time ago, I think it used to be called songbird fever. Cats outside, and they would catch wild birds and then get respiratory, neurologic, or liver signs, or any combination, which is what the virus causes. But what's interesting is they recall all these foods, but there's like one cat. And there are other outbreaks. There was one in, I think, 2016 or so in New York in a shelter. And like 50 cats or something like that were isolated the virus from, but only like 10 cats were sick and only one cat died. So it's hard to say don't do these things because eating raw food causes it, when how many cats across the United States alone, let alone in the Northwest in the Oregon area, and yet there's only one or two reported cases. So, I mean, I was asked a question about what's your view on this pandemic that's occurring. I was like, well, what pandemic are you talking about? You know, we have less than 100 cats in 20 years that have been diagnosed in the United States. And there have been a few cases in Europe, but it's not like this great outbreak. So again, a little bit long-winded, but I wanted to bring that in because that's the hot topic right now with raw diets.
Right. And it's another one of the headlines. However, I will say if that was my cat that died, it would be really important to me. So.
Oh, no, I get that. That's true. I mean, when it happens, it's 100%, yeah. Right? And what you're doing is you're saying, well, just minimize it by not doing it. But I think that gives a little bit of a false sense of security. It's like, for example, that one cat in Oregon that was diagnosed and the health department or the state veterinarian said the cat was indoors only ate that food, has to be the food. You don't have it. There was not that I've seen yet any information on was an old cat. Did it have any other problems? We know this virus can exist in other things. What if the human had it and they contaminated the food? So it wasn't real. If it was in the food, but not in the food before it came into the household. Like you don't have that information. And so again, it's really tough to say it's this when you don't know all the facts.
Yes, I find that feature of like social media very frustrating.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was what the state veterinarian.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know, it's got to be this. You go, well, what about all this? In fact, I asked, what was the cat's health status? Anybody else sick in the house? Was it found in the environment? Does a cat, and there's none of that information. I'll also say no one's looking at non-raw foods, right? Like, it's in raw food, and the assumption is, well, because it's processed, no big deal, right? But the processing kills it. But we know that that's not totally true. We see salmonella in dry cat food, dry dog food. Like one of the comments about 4 or 5 years ago, there was salmonella associated with eating a very well-known commercial over-the-counter, dry, heat-processed, carbohydrate-based cat food. So when you only have part of the story, it's easy to draw a conclusion that fits what you want to see.
Absolutely. And that's why it's important to ask a lot of questions. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show today, because there are a lot of questions. And speaking of questions, I've got some listener questions or maybe patient questions that have come up. And I want to see what you think. Here's one I heard lately. My cat is a picky eater and he refuses to eat certain types of food. What can I do?
Find the food the cat like and feed those. I mean, that's like, it, you know, sort of like, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor says, well, then just don't do that. I think the questions are more that, is there a need to feed those foods? There are plenty of foods out there. And it may be cats are very texture driven. Cats become very creatures of habit too. One good way around it is to feed diversified foods. For example, with our cats, we feed them a homemade diet, but we also feed them some canned and dry foods, but we use different diets made by different companies and we mix around so they don't get locked into any one flavor, texture, or company. That is a good way to prevent it. But again, if you're looking at, well, they won't eat these foods, but they'll eat the others, well, why are you forcing it? Many times that comes into play with, my cat has a disease like chronic kidney disease, and it won't eat a kidney diet. Now, what do I do? And that's where you've got to be patient. If you really need to get them to eat a certain food because of a condition, one or more, and you need to modify their diet to help with treating that condition, then it may take some time. Oftentimes, we tell people, well, you know, take 4 or 5 days or a week and just switch them over. You know, a little bit of the new food, a lot of the old food, and then just exchange them out. But there are actually studies, especially in cats with chronic kidney disease, there are about 5 or 6 that showed that sometimes it takes months to get them to transition. So it isn't necessarily going to happen in 2 to 4 or 5 or 6 days or even 2 weeks. You just need to be patient and keep trying and keep adding and keep working at it if you need to get them on that special diet.
That's very helpful because Sometimes I do have to get cats onto a special diet.
Right. Yeah, and they don't eat it. So, I mean, it's better if the cat eats all of the right diets for a condition, but it's okay if they don't, because if they don't eat, starvation is a terrible way to die. So if you can't get them to eat that food, then you just deal with what you've got and you make the best of the situation. But if you are patient, many cats will transition over. It's just, I think what happens is we're going to feed a new food and this cat's been eating one thing and they put it down and they eat it or they nibble at it. They don't want it. They don't eat it right away. So they take it up. They put a new one down. They put a new one down. They keep putting new ones down every 3 or 4 days and never give a cat a chance to sort of investigate and explore. I think another thing that helps is cats are hunters, and you should see our place with the number of cat toys and puzzles. And we feed them up high. We put food down low. They have to climb. They have to hunt. They have to do things to find the food. And so if you literally and figuratively feed into their hunting instinct, then that will often stimulate them to eat some of those foods too, because now they're playing the game. You're tapping into their instinct, their basic instinct that is hard for them to fight sometimes.
Yeah, I think that cats are going to be cats and you got to work around their catness, I think.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for your time today and answering all of my odd questions about headlines and helping my listeners learn how to take the best care of their cats. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm sorry I got long-winded on some of those and we didn't get to some of the other questions. So
that is completely fine, because I am happy to have you back and I appreciate your advice for sure. And also, I appreciate Mark Winter, our amazing producer. And if you like this show, listeners, please share it, subscribe, and follow it. And until next time, give your cats some extra love and attention and go out and have a perfect day.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.